Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hope everybody's doing well. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed Podcast. And today we have Father Vincent calling in from Brookville, Indiana. And he has a book out called Exorcism, Satan and His Demons. I want to welcome Father Vincent to the show.
It's good to be with you, John.
So this is very interesting because I'm a clairsentient and I do things by feel. And I feel a lot of things. I don't see anything. I had Native American on both sides of my family. And when you talk about light or dark energy and you define your book, Exorcism, what does that mean? What is that when you define a book and call it, give it the title Exorcism?
Well, exorcism is a prayer that the Catholic Church uses for those who are up against the forces of evil. So think of the devil and other spiritual entities that are trapped in the world of darkness, who sometimes lure people into that darkness. So exorcism is a way to provide ministry to bring people out of the realm of the devil and to bring them into the realm of God.
Now, when you do this, is this literally pulling a dark energy out of someone? Is that what it is? Let's look at it scientifically. Is it a dark energy you're releasing from someone's body?
The better way to look at it would be a spiritual entity, because it lacks any bodily form, is not contained by space. If we're in a room, that space is containing us, but a truly spiritual creature would be containing the space. So when somebody is possessed by an evil spirit, it isn't necessarily that the spirit is inside of them. It means that they're being contained by the evil, that power of darkness. And then an exorcism prayer is invoking the power of God to break that containment, if you will, to bring that person out of the realm of evil, and then to bring them into the realm of God.
Now, where are you from originally?
I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. I've been a priest for the past 32 years. And back in 2005, my bishop appointed me to do exorcism ministry here in the Archdiocese of Indianapolis.
So how old are you when you started into your practice?
I was 28 years old when I was ordained a priest, and then I was 42 when I began exorcism ministry. I'm 60 years old now, so I've been doing it for the past 18 years.
Wow. So did you think before you were 28, before you became a priest, did you think this would what you would be doing in your life at 42 years old?
Absolutely not. You know, when a Catholic priest is ordained, he promises obedience to his bishop and his successors. So it wasn't a job that I was looking for, but it was one that my bishop appointed me to. My bishop in Indianapolis at the time had been the rector of the college seminary that I attended in southern Indiana. And when he was looking for a priest to take on this role, I think he chose me because we had a connection with one another. He knew me from the days that I was there in the seminary.
So as you're growing up in Indiana area, you know, I mean, it's southern. I'm a southern boy. Why were you drawn to being a priest? What made you want to fulfill this for your life?
I grew up in a very traditional Catholic family. My mother actually was not raised Catholic. She became Catholic when she married my dad. I have 8 brothers and sisters, so the church has always been important in our lives. We attended Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. We would always be involved in the life of the church. So the church was just a central part of the family life. So it was just a natural, I don't know, pathway, if you will, to at least consider becoming a priest.
So as you start this career, I mean, what is that? You know, being in touch with spirit and so forth. What does that feel like in life? What does that feel like for yourself going through this process?
Well, you know, as a priest, currently I'm a pastor of 2 churches here in southeastern Indiana. and any pastor is involved in the lives of the people that belong to the church. So you're there when someone, you know, gets married, during a funeral, baptisms. So the priest would be just a part of a family's life at different stages, either when they're getting married again, starting out their own life, maybe when they have a child, when there's a death in the family. So it's just being engaged in the life of people. And then in the ministry of exorcism, which I do in addition to being the pastor of two churches, it's a way of being with people in a very special way who are dealing with the forces of evil and to helping them break that in their life so that they can go back or maybe come to a relationship with God for the very first time. Even though I'm a Catholic priest, half of the people who contact me regarding exorcisms are not Catholic. They come from other Christian faith traditions, other world religions, or maybe no faith background whatsoever. But the Catholic Church, when it comes to exorcism, views it as a ministry of charity. So the church would provide help and guidance to anyone who feels as if they're dealing with the power of evil.
Now, did the Catholics start this type of prayer, this exorcism prayer?
No, Catholics would say that it goes back to Jesus himself. We read the Bible in the New Testament, especially in the Gospels. Jesus is performing exorcisms. In chapter 9 of Luke's Gospel, Jesus sends the 12 out and he gives them authority over all unclean spirits and the power to heal. So the church, in doing the ministry of exorcism, is continuing what Jesus himself did. So he sent his disciples out, and the church today continues that ministry, again, that was started by Jesus himself.
Is this, you know, when you're doing this prayer, is there key words? Is there triggers? How does the prayer trigger action, you know, when you're performing this?
Oh, the power is in the name of Jesus. So really, in an exorcism, people aren't relying on me. You know, I may have the title of being an exorcist, but I don't have any special powers or abilities. The true power resides with Jesus Christ and the power of his name. So in an exorcism, the church would invoke the name of Jesus, and in doing so, commanding a demon to depart from someone and to make room for Christ. We might even say that in an exorcism, a demon is commanded to return that which it has stolen, namely a person created in the image and likeness of God.
Where do you think these demons come from?
You know, the tradition of the church says that God created the angelic world, and after the creation of the angelic world, angels were given intellect and free will. So angels don't have to learn anything. It's like a computer being downloaded with information. They can just call things up. And then after God created angels, he gave them the opportunity to unite their free will with his will. And then the belief is that Lucifer, one of the greatest angels, rebelled against God, and then his rebellion influenced one-third of the angels to follow him. In the book of Revelation, it speaks about how the tail of the dragons swept one-third of the stars out of the sky, and that's a reference to the angels that fell along with Lucifer. So evil spirits would be fallen angels who have rejected God, and their affliction against humanity would be to try and convince us to reject God as they themselves have done.
So it's kind of like a perpetuation, right? Over time, mm-hmm. darkness. You know, when you think about different parts of the country and you hear stories and some, you know, I say country, parts of the world, and you hear these stories all around the world, the perpetuation of darkness in certain regions where there's a divide of light and dark. If there's a bloodline or a family that, or group of people, whatever you want to call it, perpetuate this darkness through their lineage over and over and over, can you still do an exorcism for a third and fourth generation individual that's been carrying this darkness through many years of life in families or what have you?
Yeah. I mean, if there is this evil that's been perpetuated through the generational lines of a family, you know, exorcisms cannot be performed on anyone against their will. I mean, we all have free will. We can make the choice for good or for evil. If somebody were to ask for help, so if somebody's been afflicted down through the generational lines and they realize that, and if they want to do something about that, then they can reach out for help. They can either do that from their own personal faith tradition, if you will. I mean, the Catholic Church does not have a monopoly on the practice of exorcism. You know, for us, it's a liturgical rite, for it's a, so there's a prescribed way for it to be done. But ultimately, it's the power of Christ that will set anyone free who's fallen under the grip of the devil. And anyone who realizes that can ask for help, regardless of the family members that came before them. Because ultimately, the power of God, the power of good, is greater than the power of evil and the power of the devil.
So what do you think about a Hebrew bloodline versus a non-Hebrew bloodline? Because a little
Say something more about that, yeah.
Well, a little bit of my, you know, from a Hebrew bloodline and non-Hebrew bloodline, my understanding is God created a human being that was a Hebrew bloodline. And somehow, however it happened, a dark entity came into play that he didn't expect that diluted that bloodline. And the biggest battle is over the bloodline for humanity. How does that, resonate with in your world?
Not so much. I think from a Catholic perspective, we go back to the story of creation in the book of Genesis in the Old Testament of the Bible, that Adam and Eve are considered to be our first parents. And then they were tempted by the serpent in the garden, who was convinced them to reject God, not to trust God, and again, to use their free will in such a way as to turn away from God rather than turning towards God, much like these angelic creatures did after their creation. Again, one third chose to turn away from God, and that's what these forces of evil would try to have us do.
So this is another interesting question is, you know, when you think about the gospel and you think about the word, you know, and we're carrying this word through multiple generations and the dilution of that word, you know, what makes us still stay to that word that's written that could be diluted over time? What, you know, when you talk about Catholics, Baptists, because I'm the type of person, like, I believe in human beings. You know, it's okay to choose whatever religion you want to choose. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a good person, you're a good person. And I think there's either the light or the dark. That's kind of how I look at things, because my dad was Catholic and my mom was Baptist. What do you think about, you know, if priests and Catholic, you know, or priests and different priests at other churches, maybe Baptists, whatever you want to call it, got together? Kind of like a group of scientists, and kind of just put ideas in a pot of, hey, what makes sense? What doesn't make sense? We're still living by this word here, but this word could have been modified, and this direction could have been modified. Is there any thought processes like that you have when you're in a position like yourself?
Yeah, I think the notion is that Jesus promised that the jaws of death and darkness would never prevail over the church, that the Holy Spirit is still guiding the church to understand truth. You know, from a Catholic perspective, certainly we have the Word of God, but we also have the teaching authority of the church that constantly is evaluating the Word, making sure that we're being true to it. And then we have the tradition of the church, just the way that, you know, early Christians practice their faith. So again, for Catholics, I would say that our faith is like a three-legged stool. It rests on the Word of God, the Bible. It rests on the teaching authority of the church, and also the tradition of the church with a capital T. So those three things kind of work hand in hand to make sure that the church is still being true to those ideas that Jesus put out there when he created the church.
Because a lot of times you don't hear that narrative, you know, from people like yourself, that I think you should hear that narrative more, like what's going through your head, you know, and what's going through the people's head that are delivering the word, you know, because you only hear the word and you don't really hear the process of the person, how the person or the priest is processing this information to the public. What do you think about being a little more out front with some of these personalities and people that are speaking about the word to kind of tell a little more of the story about what life is really about? It's almost like there's, you know, like when movies are made or whatever, it's like there's a veil, right? You don't really go past that veil or whatever it is of narrative, getting past it there. But I think if you went past that veil and tried to understand what was in their heads, do you not think that would define things a little more about what's going on in some of the churches around the world?
No, I think that's what most religious leaders try to do when they preach on the word. So obviously you read the word, but then you break it open. From a Catholic perspective, like the priest would give a homily at Mass on Sunday. And the word homily means to crack open, just like an egg. And the purpose of a homily would be to take the readings, the word that people just listened to, and then to crack them open so that people would know how to apply that word to their own life, to their own situations and where they find themselves. We should never listen to the word and say, well, that's an interesting story about what happened so long ago. But the challenge is, how do people apply that to their own lives today, the situations that we're facing, you know, society in general? Because ultimately, we would say that the word is timeless. It wasn't just meant for a particular people at one moment in history, but it's meant for all peoples of all times and all places. And you're right, we certainly need to know how to apply that word to modern day circumstances and whatever it is that people are dealing with.
Because when you talk about this perpetuation and how things could have been modified over time, and you know, the narrative got changed a little bit, you can't fault anybody in the middle of that situation, because that's what they were presented, that's what they know, and you don't know what you don't know. So, but if you looked at where the percentage started, right, and kind of back down and started from where that percentage of whatever that narrative is started, and kind of walk through that, maybe that could open up somewhat of a conversation, instead of, because sometimes I feel like religion is handcuffed, you know, and maybe there's more you could get out of it, you know, to help more people. Because when you look at society today, and obviously how some of this has been handled, to be more pronounced and not have a lot of these negative narratives out in society, I think we could have defeated that before it happened. What do you think about some of the narratives out in the public today and how people are living their lives from your perspective?
Give me an example of what you mean by those narratives. That'll help me.
Well, you know, I think the more people know about the people delivering the message, the more comfortable they are. And I think people have been very, very uncomfortable about parts of religion over time that's been perpetuated over and over and over. And now you see these negative connotations of, you know, and narratives going against the word. Because I feel like if you're going to go against the word, maybe you haven't been educated the right way properly, you know, about taking religion out of schools and just all these balance people are trying to find. What do you think about this type of movement within society?
I don't know. I guess your question made me just think of the whole notion of, a lot of times people talk about the separation of church and state, and somehow that's a good thing. But if really we're getting from the word on how we're called to structure society and our relationships with one another, then, you know, you think of ancient Israel where, you know, church and state were united as one. They weren't separated, but somehow we believe that the separation of church and state is a good idea. But if really the church is speaking a divine message that's coming from God, it's truth that comes from God on how we're called to order our society, then somehow they should be blended together on some level. But I do think there's a movement today to try to take God out of society. So you mentioned whether there's no longer prayer in school and those types of things. I would say that the human person needs to be in a relationship with God, that we have the innate desire for God. And when we don't foster that desire for God, it kind of leads to an identity crisis. We don't really know who we are.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Who's we are? St. Augustine, writing at the end of the 4th and early 5th centuries, gave the classic line, when he said, in reference to God, you have created us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. If there's a lot of restlessness in society today, I think the reason for that is that we are moving away from God. You know, faith in God will lead us in one direction, but the lack of faith will lead us in another. And because faith does seem to be in decline in the lives of many people today, I think that's being played out in all the polarization, the negativity, the isolation, and a lot of the ugliness that we see in society today. And I would suggest that the solution is to once again give God his rightful place, not only in society, but in our lives as individuals as well.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree. There's only one God, and, you know, it's hard to go against that. You know what I mean? It's hard, you know, if there's only one, I mean, it's hard to go against that. And going back to the exorcism, what type of personalities and interesting events have you experienced doing these exorcisms?
You know, whenever I work with somebody, there's kind of a process that's followed. So I'm trained to be a skeptic. You know, I need to reach moral certitude, believing beyond a doubt the person in front of me is truly dealing with extraordinary demonic activity in their life. So there is a very strict protocol that's followed. Somebody needs to have some type of psychiatric evaluation to rule out a mental cause for what it is that they're dealing with. They need to have a medical examination by a doctor to rule out the fact that maybe they're having some type of physical ailment. I would meet with them, step three, and do an intake questionnaire. If it is evil, what did a person do either directly or indirectly that opened up a doorway for the demonic into their life? Because as people of faith, you know, I think, you know, as Christians, if people are going to church, if they're praying, they're reading the word and they know it and they're living it out in their lives, the devil's already on the run. We don't have to do anything extraordinary to defeat the devil. It's the very ordinary aspects of our faith. And so again, trying to figure out what did someone do to open up that entry point. There are four signs that possible that would make it really possible that one is possessed that I'm called to look for. The ability to speak and understand languages otherwise unknown to the individual, having superhuman strength beyond the normal capacity of that person, having elevated perception, knowledge about things that that person as an individual should not otherwise know, and then a strong negative reaction to anything of a sacred nature, such as being in a church, having the Bible read in front of them, being blessed with holy water, being shown a crucifix, any symbols that pertain to Christianity that would cause a negative reaction could be a sign of possible demonic possession. And when demons manifest, there's all different types of actions that one can see. There's eyes rolled in the back of the head, the foaming at the mouth, the growling, snarling. The temperature in the room can drop and become much colder. There can be a very horrible stench. There can be bodily contortions. I've seen demons when they manifest to cause the human body to drop to the floor and slither like a snake. I've seen bodies levitate during exorcisms. So again, the demon is trying to distort the human person. You know, the greatest thing that, from a Christian perspective, that God has done for us is the incarnation. God took on human form in the person of Jesus. And because the devil wants to mimic God in every possible way, he believes in his own twisted sense that he takes on human form by possessing a human body. But then when he does that, he distorts it. He makes it something ugly and hideous as a way to indirectly attack God himself.
So it's really the darkness gets in by fear.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the devil feeds on, is fear. I mean, even the word tells us that, you know, perfect faith and having love will cast fear out of our lives. And as long as we're not afraid, then there's no way the devil can get a foothold into our lives.
From my perspective, dark energy is very weak. It's very, very weak. So why do we give it so much attention? Because I think if we gave it less attention, it wouldn't be as predominant.
Oh, I agree. But I think people today are fascinated by this darkness. You look at the entertainment industry, whether it's things like Halloween or movies or literature, people are just really, really fascinated by this persona of the devil and these other evil spirits and the powers of darkness. And evil can play on a person's memory and imagination. So the more that we put this stuff into our minds, the devil can use that as a way to instill fear. And if we just would move away from that, then you're right. Yeah, darkness truly is weak. The devil always wants to portray himself as something greater than he is. And again, the power we give to him through fear is what he can use to manipulate us.
Well, and going back to what you said earlier, I mean, I think if you have a universal pure source that you pull from, right, and you present that pure source to the world, then you're good. But I think the problem is when people don't present that pure source the right way, that's where things get diluted in a way. What do you think about, because I'm a natural healer. I have energy coming out of my hands. I've been told this would be funny. I mean, saying to a priest, but I've been told that my bloodline was from John the Baptist. I think Reiki is a club because I was able to get my Reiki master. I don't have the Reiki master yet, but basically had the abilities of a Reiki master, which I think is like I said, a club. What do you think about people like that, you know, that are out there that could do things naturally to help humans?
I think the question would always be, what is the source of that power? You know, is the person a man of God? Because again, you can look in the Bible and the amazing things that men and women were capable of doing, but it was the power of God operating in and through them. So it really wasn't the focus on that person as an individual, but it was what God was doing through them. You know, in the Old Testament, there's the story of Moses going before Pharaoh and his staff turns into a serpent. But then Pharaoh's magicians are able to replicate that. And what's the difference between the two? For Moses, being a man of God, it was the power of God that was working through him. Pharaoh's magicians, we would say, was the power of evil working through them. So again, it's really a question of what is the source of the power that one claims to have?
Well, I created this process. I'm a partner with Meta, became a partner with TikTok, and I'll preface this by saying I want to create something, a tech health Bible to kind of help change that. That doesn't have anything to do with here, but through this process of tech, I learned human behavior and I created a way to use content to eliminate unconscious bias for a business. You know, it's using content and using law of attraction to attract the demo, a demographic, right? And you collect this demographic to start creating a pure source demographic. And you start to understand how that demographic will respond, whether for your business, whatever it is. So through this digging, I realized my wife told me, I have some quantum physics coming through. I've talked to scientists all over the world. Giles Joe at Cambridge University. He's a neuroscience professor there. Avi Loeb, who's head of astronomy at Harvard. I've talked to all these people and we've had some great conversations. But through this pushing of figuring out how to create a pure source in quantum physics, I always kept saying this thing, God created everything in a linear process. And it just kept coming. Everything's linear. And I would say these words: environment, foundation, sensitivities, tone, timing, emotions, consciousness, or landscape. I would say all these words. But as I pushed through this process, I made a discovery that God created everything in fours, and it's linear mathematically. This is not a spiritual thing. I haven't figured out the math yet, but I've talked to different people. I understand that God created the universe in four powers. The universe is made of four parts. Then you look at the planetary system, you have four terrestrial planets, you have four gas planets. The moving parts of that, and this is tied to your body, the moving parts of that is the sun, the moon, and Pluto. So if you look at your seven chakras, and you look at the root chakras, the sun, and you go up Mercury, you go Mercury, Venus, Earth. Earth is your heart chakra. Mars is your throat chakra. The third eye is the moon. Pluto's the crown chakra, right? Tied to the body. And that's just the elevator pitch for that part. It's a little more complicated, but then you go to Earth. Earth is in four parts. You have inner core, outer core, mantle, crust. You have four directions. You have four gases. Your body's made of four humors. And when you understand, this is where science stops. When you understand non-conscious, There's four parts to that. There's non-conscious, subconscious, unconscious bias, and consciousness. When you understand non-conscious, it speaks to, in thinking about creation of four, and then in the number four in the Bible is creation, right? The cross is four. All this makes sense. And you can go on and on and on. It speaks to there were more than two human beings that God created. Has the religious entities ever thought about something like that or realized something like that? Because you can do the research of creation of four and all this information is there.
Yeah, I think there's always debates and questions on that. But at least from a Christian perspective, we would follow the Bible itself. There are books that are out there that are just as old as the books of the Bible, but they've not been accepted as an official part of the canon itself. So at least from a strictly Christian perspective, it would be what we see in the Bible that would be the guiding and grounding principles of faith in what we believe.
Because if God created things in four and he created four human beings, the rationale of that, when you understand non-conscious, and this is where scientists stop, and I don't know why they stop. They shouldn't stop there. It basically is linear to the fact that they needed four different types of non-conscious humans that can go in four different directions. Because if you took out emotions, because there's four directions on Earth and everything else is four, because if you took out emotions and you understood each person's non-conscious, you could determine based on the environment where those people would go and what they would do. What do you think about applying some of these rationales to the religious world?
Yeah, I think those things would have to be tested to see if they're true. I mean, that may be something that you believe, but it isn't necessarily something that Christianity or certain faith traditions would accept. So one could have a difference of opinion on all of that kind of stuff. And that would require, you know, those of a theologians in the church to get together and debate these types of questions.
Because the other thing was, I thought we live in a space of discovery. There's two mindsets in the world. Most of the people in the world today come from a discovery mindset. And a discovery mindset will take you forever to determine anything because you're discovering the pieces. But if you came at something from a creation mindset, and let's look at creation. If it's true, and I'm not saying this is true or not, this is just rationale of information that I don't know where it came from, right? But when you think about if you created the universe in four powers, universes in four parts, and you can determine it's mathematical all the way to the earth, to a human body, what do you do when it's mathematical? And it pins you against the wall with the answer. Opinions don't count. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, I think you're speaking from a perspective that, you know, is certainly not at the very basics, at least from a Catholic perspective of the story of creation and God. So you may be inserting kind of part of your own belief system. But, you know, as a priest and a representative of the church, then it isn't really necessarily what I believe individually, but what I believe that God has revealed to us and continues to be perpetuated through the life of the church.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I believe it or not. You know, these are just rationales and information that has been put in front of me and just through my sense of enlightenment and my discovery on who I am, because I'm learning every day. I'm a highly sensitive person and I can feel everything and, you know, I can feel a room, I can feel people, you know, I can get answers. Sometimes I feel like I'm led the right direction. I try to keep all negative thoughts out of my head. And going back to the book, and we'll close down here. I just wanted to ask you some kind of interesting questions you probably haven't been asked before. And when you talk about the book, what is your objective of the book? And the name of the book, Exorcism, The Battle Against Satan and His Demons. What's your goal and what's your passion to get out of this book you wrote?
I think the purpose of writing the book was to give people a glimpse into the ministry of exorcism. What is it? Because I think a lot of people out there may have some idea or conception of what exorcism is based on their own research or, you know, shaped by modern culture. But it's a way of putting out there what the Catholic Church believes about exorcism and the reality of evil. But ultimately, the goal of the book would be to help people not to focus on what evil is trying to do in their life, but what God wants to do in their life. And ultimately, when we invite God in, then there's no reason to fear evil. Because again, we're focused on something that is good. I mean, you just talked about every day meditating on the fact that, you know, no bad or negative thoughts in your life. And I think it's challenging people just to root anything that's bad or evil out of their life and to focus on God and that which is good. So really the purpose of the book would be to help people focus more on what God wants to do in their life.
And I'm going to leave you with another cliffhanger here. Now, through this creation of four, the pineal gland, that is God's data center. That's where God's getting the data. That's where God, data or data, however you want to call it. That's where God's getting the information, is your pineal gland. And that's not talked about. What is very, very strange about through this discovery, and nobody's ever talked about this, when you look at your pineal gland, and I noticed it from the Egyptian symbol with the third eye. And if you look at the slant, that angle, I started looking at that angle, the bone in our head. That bone in our pineal gland, if you look at it, is a 1/4 slant, right? So if you think about God created the universe and four powers, and all this is linear, tied to the human body, to your pineal gland and the angle, because if you take that slant bone and put it on a flat surface, it's a 1/4 slant. I mean, there's no denying that. That ties the beginning and the end of how God is tied to the human body. What would you think about that? Have you ever heard anything like that before?
I have not. I have not heard anything like that before at all. No.
Do some research on that, because I think if people want to really open up their spirituality, because we have the fluoride and stuff that's in the water that calcifies our pineal gland, and our medical system doesn't talk about that. If you're a spiritual person, I think you should try to cleanse your pineal gland as much as possible, if that's the truth. And I'm not declaring that to be the truth or whatever, but it's a good lawyer told me one time, I'm too old to believe in coincidences. But that's what it led to, and I forgot to mention that. But I think our pineal gland is a lot more important in spirituality than we give credit to. And I think maybe people should maybe look at that, because that's something that hasn't really been written in the books. And maybe there's a reason why. I don't know. Just a thought out there. But hopefully we opened up some eyes and brought some awareness to your book. It's very, 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 very interesting. I think you definitely got the right demeanor. You're like the poker face all the way through. Well, sir, I appreciate you coming on the show, sometimes throwing some stuff in there to try to get your opinion on things, Uh-huh. These are things I think about, because I'm always trying to push the envelope in whatever I do, you only got one life. I want to maximize it,
Nothing wrong with taking one's thought process to a deeper level.
Absolutely. So if we want to find the book, where do we get the book at?
The book is available out there online. So all the normal sources like that. So it can be found out there if people are interested in delving a bit deeper into the topic.
And that name of the book, again, just for reference, is Exorcism, The Battle Against Satan and His Demons. Obviously here it's on Amazon. It's on several other outlets. If you want to check it out, I think it'll be a great read. And I appreciate you coming on the show. This has been Father Vince, a.k.a. Vincent Lampert. And I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.